Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Heather Reads Between the Lines. And we are finally on the other side of Cold Case, Colorado, so let's take one last look at its general direction. So before I get started, I do want to say that I have been informed that I have read this book incorrectly. My technical advisor has told me that when you read mysteries, you have to have a notebook out and taking notes and thinking like a detective. And while I do take notes while I'm reading for these, I didn't take notes like that. I think he's telling me about, you know, like examining clues and just trying to figure out, like, what are the inconsistencies? What are the other characters doing? Like, you know, like really try to dig deep into that. And I will try that again. We're probably going to do another mystery. Like, I'm not going to completely write off the entire genre. So we'll probably give it another go soon. Maybe not that soon though. So yeah. Now, after a little bit of separation from the book, it's been a little while since I've read it now. Looking back, I honestly start to get the feeling that it's basically like a soap opera, and it wasn't really relatable at all. Everyone's like stupid rich, no one's making any good choices, and the setup just really wasn't connecting with me. I mean, with Vanessa as our heroine, she's not really a pleasant person. Like, from her performative feminism to her gross underestimation of what depression is, she was an extremely frustrating protagonist. And Ty was not much better at that on his own either. He, like, you know, he's a cop. He should be able to, like, you know, be clear-headed, theoretically. But no, he's already cast suspicion on a completely innocent man, and he's trying to move his relationship at lightning speed. Like I said in the review, like, he was already thinking about what kind of office he could build for Vanessa in his cabin. They'd only known each other for like 2 or 3 days. It was crazy. It's like, no one moves that quickly. He was just a complete mess. They didn't really feel like real people. They felt like tropes wrapped in people clothing. Like, and the other thing is, like, how is Ty both a cowboy and a cop and then a carpenter? Like, you gotta pick one of these things. You cannot do all of them. But I think that's another really good example of this book not really knowing what it was. Like, Cold Case Colorado just had so much going on. It was just everywhere, all over the place. It was like, you know, we've got the strong, independent female who's throwing herself at, you know, the nearest alpha male. That was ridiculous. We've got the will issue. We have the murder mystery. We have the disappearance. We have the added complications of Simon with his memoir. There was a lot. There was absolutely a lot. And there's a lot of setup going in, but the payoff was just not satisfying. So, like, they make a huge deal in the book about how Vanessa's father was estranged from Dorothy, Vanessa's aunt. They make this huge big deal about it. Like, oh my gosh, what actually happened? That sounds like a genuine traumatic break within the family. But no, it was a money problem. Like, it was a selfish money problem. And so Vanessa, like, had to suffer as a result of this separation over a stupid money problem. It's just like, he wanted to buy an island. As far as I can tell in the story, he wanted to buy an island and she said no. So they stopped talking. Like, if there is one way to make me not care about your characters, making them argue about petty nonsense when they're rich as all get out is just, yeah, no, that's not happening. And the ending itself was a mess, of course. I really did genuinely try to find the bit that said Keith had spread gas all over the secret game room or whatever it was. I looked, I'm like, I know I saw it exactly once. I'm like, oh, okay, there it is. But when I tried to find it again on my next read through to get ready for the podcast, I couldn't find it. Poof, it vanished. And of course, you know, gas doesn't ignite when you shoot a gun at it. I mean, it's not that kind of combustible liquid. It doesn't do that. So I really do think that the only mystery in this so-called mystery novel is how this made it that far. I mean, again, this is just one of those things where I'm like, I'm just not on what everybody's on. Like, I'll see what all the kids are doing these days, and they're reading that, and like, I look at it, I'm like, okay. Yeah, I am not hip to this one. So it was a lot of a mess. And again, that ending, like the fact that nothing had been resolved and 10 pages were only left, and I don't know how they could have added more pages. It's not like they didn't have the ability to add more pages. I'm not sure what the decision was to try to cram this in as much or as little space as they were using. You can have more pages. There must have been like some kind of contractual, like you cannot exceed these many pages or something, but that doesn't make sense either because there's a variety of lengths. One of the big things about the Harlequin books, and one reason why I chose them, is that they're pretty bite-sized. I can read them in a couple hours, but you can take time. Like there was enough time to add more things if you were allowed to have the time. So it's just, I just felt it just crammed too much, and I'm probably just rambling at this point about how exhausting the read was. It was, yep. Yeah, for me, Cold Case Colorado was a mess, and I think I'm going to leave that one at that. So we're going to go ahead and move on, and we're going to move on to what I have been reading. And I have just finished reading The Last Fallen Star by Gracie Kim. So on the last Between the Lines, I mentioned that I was reading a book from the Jimmy Presents series. This is a similar sort of book, but this is from Rick Riordan. I think that's who you pronounce his name. I'm not sure. He is of Percy Jackson and the Olympians fame. But this is one of the Presents series for him. And this is a really, really fun book. I kind of found this by accident. I will say that this is for younger readers. This is for your middle grade student. And it wouldn't have necessarily been on my radar, but I found it in an ad as I was doom scrolling, as the kids are saying these days. But it caught my eye, especially since it screamed fantasy novel. And it's really exciting because it's fantasy based on Korean folklore. So the basic gist of the book is a young woman named Riley Oh was adopted into a family of Korean-American witches. There are several clans of witches with patron goddesses in this world, but Riley has no magic. She is called a Saram, and it's a little bit like a Harry Potter situation. The Sarams don't know and can't know about the witches and the clans. It's a really, really great adventure and coming-of-age novel, and it's got that really awesome addition of having an Asian-American heroine. And if you are all familiar with Korean mythology, you're going to love this book. There was so much to discover, and I had a blast. The clans are based on animals with special significance to Korea. The Korean peninsula is shaped like a tiger in some art, and there's a tiger clan, the Horangi clan. Riley Oh is part of the Gom clan for bear. In Korean mythology, there is a bear woman. She actually made an appearance at the Winter Olympics back in 2018, if you were paying attention. But that was a story of how a bear transformed into a human woman by eating garlic and mugwort for 21 days. And there's just lots more of that. Of course, there's not an exact translation of all of those myths. There's a lot of artistic license taken, but that's what makes it awesome. Young Korean Americans now have a book that represents them and their cultural touchstones. And it's an excellent addition to creating Asian American representation in our media. I mean, the book even mentions H-Mart. If you are lucky enough to be in the general vicinity of an H-Mart, I implore you to go. The book only had to mention one H-Mart and two a fried chicken stand, and I was already salivating. That I need to get me some Korean fried chicken soon. If you've not had Korean fried chicken, go get it. It is awesome. There were some things that I didn't like about it. It obviously reads really young. I mean, it is a middle grade book, but that's fine. Like, I knew that going in, so that was all right. It does dabble in the liar revealed plotline, and I think that's definitely a story meant for younger readers. Kind of like, you know, the sort of, you know, let's spin the wheel of morality here. The liar revealed is a plotline that frustrates me. I don't understand why people keep falling on it, but it's not a main focus in the book. It's just in there. It's a frustrating narrative device for me, but that shouldn't detract from the book itself. It's fantastic. I'm telling you, go buy this book and read it. Go buy it for a young person in your life. It's fantastic. We need more books like this, and that's why I'm telling you about it. Go read it. It's great. I think that's going to wrap it up for us this week. I am so glad that you've joined us. Next week is going to be A Wolf in Duke's Clothing by Susanna Allen. So I really hope you're ready for something new next time. Thank you again for joining me. I really hope you come back for Heather Reads, the podcast. If you like the show, you can visit us at heatherreads.com for more. There you can also find links to the music that you heard on our show today, provided by The Harpies. If you have any questions or just want to say hi, you can email us at podcast@heatherreads.com. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster, and our technical advisor is Kwang Hyun Cho. And remember, it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.